Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi lads, thanks for tuning into the podcast again. Don't forget to like and subscribe and head over to the Patreon to contribute and help us out. Thanks a million and enjoy the podcast. Hello everybody and welcome back to the Two Nowries podcast. I'm your host James Erno, joined by my good friend Timmy Dan.
Hi everyone.
Rowan is on the deck, say hi Rowan.
Hi Rowan.
Tonight we're up in Churchfield as always, up in a sweltering heat of a Thursday night, and we have our own Cork's own lightweight boxer, super featherweight.
Yeah.
James Power, how are you keeping, James?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to have you here. You're one of our youngest guests, you're only 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kian O'Mahony might be our youngest at 19.
Obviously.
But it's great to have younger lads on because we've a young audience as well, you know. Mm. But I know you as your family's originally from Knocknaheeny and Hollyhill.
Yeah.
Where we're from. But you're a Macroom lad.
Yeah, so I'm living in Dripsea now at the moment.
Nice part of the world.
Yeah.
Nice little garden centre out there.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know, I love it out in Dripsea next to the river there. Yeah. And
there's plenty of running in out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's, it's peaceful.
You know, it's beautiful out there. But you'd be known as a boxer.
Yeah.
But for the people that don't know you, do you want to tell us a little about who you are and where you're from?
So my name is James Power. I'm Ireland's youngest ever professional boxer. I turned professional at the age of 17 years old. I done it while I was in my final year of secondary school. So while I was completing my Leaving Cert, I travelled to Tijuana, Mexico, obtained a professional boxing licence because I was under the age of 18, fought professionally, made my debut, won it, and then got on a plane the next day and was back in school the day after that. So a little different.
That's mad. That is mad.
Yeah, it's absolutely class. Yeah, fair player.
Thank you.
What was it? Don't we backtrack. What was the clubs you were in when you were growing up?
So, the first boxing club I suppose I trained in was Macroom Boxing Club. You know, my first few years were there. That closed down unfortunately, and myself and a few other, I suppose, main boxers moved to Fort O'Higgins, and I had the rest of my amateur career with Fort O'Higgins before turning professional.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Nolly Murphy, he's from down your way, isn't he?
So when I began boxing, Nolly would have been one of the lads that I was looking up to in the gym. He would have been one of the main fighters, and you know, that beginning few years I was with Nolly. Nolly turned professional. I don't think he came to Fort O'Higgins with us. He might have turned professional just before we went. And he went on that way and we ended up at Fort O'Higgins.
Yeah, when Nolly was preparing for a fight in Madison Square Gardens a couple of years ago, he was doing his strength and conditioning with Shane Sull, who was on the podcast here before. Mm-hmm. But I've never met Nolly, but I hear he's a gent.
Yeah,
he is. How old is he?
I'm not sure. I'd say, because when you're so young, that 5 or 6 years seems like decades.
It's a big step up to pro, is it, James?
Yeah, it is. It's different. It's a different world, you know. Being highly successful as an amateur doesn't guarantee high success as a pro. And it's a different, I suppose, it's a different world. It's more of a business than just a sport.
Mm-hmm. What was the amateur career like?
So I had 2 national titles. I reached 5 national finals. All of my losses came at, I suppose, high events, you know, finals, things like that. I had 6 county titles and 5 Munster championships. But, yeah, I got on well. I never really, I suppose, focused as much as I should have on the amateur side of it. You know, I started boxing at 9, and from 10 or 11, my eyes were set on the professional side of it. And you know, that never swayed or changed. You know, my focus was on that. And I saw the amateur as a stepping stone, as experience. And if I could fight the best and even win or lose, if I just got in there and pushed them to their limits, learn from them, then that's going to benefit me when I get to the professionals.
So you always had your eye on the professional prize, and that you were just getting experience along the way to help you.
Yeah.
Because it's common in Ireland for people to just focus on the amateur, isn't it? You think of Joe Ward and to stay in the amateurs for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, but you always wanted the professional.
Yeah.
I know you were saying that the big difference is because the big difference between the two of them is the professional is more of a business. But, you know, in terms of the fighting itself, is it tougher? Is it harder?
So, I can't say it's tougher when amateur boxing is incredibly tough.
Mm.
You know, boxing is tough no matter what. An amateur achievement is exceptional, you know. I'm not saying that an Olympic, like representing your country at the Olympics or the Worlds.
Probably the question I asked you was wrong. I suppose I'd word it this way. Is it a different style of fighting?
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, you have no headgear. You have smaller gloves. It's a lot more physical, you know. You get away with a lot more. You know, you could get a fighter that's not technical as a boxer. He's not very gifted, you know, he's not finesse, but he'll give anyone a rough night when they get in the ring, because he'll just press them, he'll push them to a place where they don't want to be. And you know, it mightn't be skillful, it might be nice to watch, but he's dog rough and he's going to give you a hell of a night.
Do you know what I often wondered about, and I'd love to see a documentary about it or something. Did I know there was a, do you know, every so often there be BT Sports, Sky Sports, they plan like fight nights where they have up and coming British boxers coming in, slaughtering fellas with 20 defeats and no wins, you know. Hmm. I often wondered about the stories of those men that come in and the straight defeats, they're going in, it's like a lamb to the slaughter. Like, how do you end up doing that? Have you ever got chatting to anybody in that position?
Yeah, so like they're part of the sport as I suppose we are. You know, I'm a prospect. I'm someone that doesn't want to go down that route and, you know, go in and fight and, I suppose, as you say, get slaughtered.
Mm.
But that's the thing that people don't really focus on, you know. They'd say, oh, why is he fighting this person with, you know, 20 losses and no wins? But that's experience. That's where good management comes in, a good promotion, where that's where you learn, you know. If you want to fight the best southpaw, well, you've got to have one of those southpaw journeymen in the bank, so that when you get there, it's not like a completely different experience. Yeah. You've already experienced something along that route before, so you know what's happening. But those men, I wouldn't go down that line myself.
It would be suicide for management to throw you in with a world champion,
if Gervonta Davis or something, that fight came up, like, I think every fighter would want to take it. That's where the management comes in, saying, like, this is not the right move for you at the moment. But as fighters, it's like, would you fight this person? Would you fight that person? Yes. Like, you could give a list of anyone, my weight division or even weight divisions above me, under, and I'm going to say yes to every single one, and every other fighter will do the same. But that's where the management comes in and says, this is the one we want you on. We'll move you into a good position, and that's how you're going to get the most from your time in the sport.
Do you know those journeymen? Do they start out like you? They're going into professional boxing with all these hopes and aspirations and dreams.
Yeah.
But then they pick up a couple of defeats and then they just kind of fall into that.
They could. Yeah, that could happen. Yeah. You know, you see people doing that and they get one loss, then two. And before you know it, you have all these losses, barely any wins, but they could still have that vision of the next one.
Yeah.
The next one. They go down that route. Now, you know, I've been in corners at professional events and, you know, you'd be sitting next to a guy maybe 30 years old and he'd say, you know, geez, you're young. Like, how are you getting on? Oh, and I've had 50 fights, 50 losses. You go, you're only 30? Like, what's... You know, you're 30-something, you're very young. This is only my part-time job, you know. I get a couple of grand every weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Get a couple of grand every 2 weeks and, you know, it's on top of my full-time job. I just stay fit and so I do it. So things like that. But managements and promotions bring in certain journeymen who they know are the step up. You know, if you give a guy like maybe like my age or something like that to a certain journeyman, it might be a step too far. They might just, as I said, rough it out, push me to a place where I don't want to be and like crack me. But
sometimes upsets happen, like, don't they?
Yeah, it's things like that, you know, and certain journeymen do that, and it's kind of a place where, is he good enough to go to European level, world level, or is he just that bit too short right now? And, you know, sometimes those journeymen are used to test that.
Do you think that the amateur pedigree that you have will stand to you if you were coming up against a guy that didn't have that amateur pedigree?
Of course.
Because, you know, when you're looking at Tyson Fury's brother, the good-looking fella, what's his name again?
Tommy.
He was fighting there the last time, but the fella he was fighting was actually a good Scottish fella. Yeah. It was a very tough fight. But Tommy doesn't have that amateur experience. Yeah. No, he's just kind of staffed at that. He's learning on the job, really. Yeah. Like, but you'd have to worry, I wonder, like, how far can he actually go without having that experience that the opponents he'd come up against eventually that have fine-tuned the boxing down to an art at a young age. I know that, you know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, like, it's the experience you have to fall back on. Mm-hmm. You know, my style of training has changed over the years. You know, it's a lot more clever, I suppose, and I can thank the coaches I've worked with, you know, like Pete Taylor, Declan Garrity, Courage Shabalala, who's my coach in LA, for kind of installing that wisdom in me where it's not brave to go in there and take punches. It's not brave to go in there and, I suppose, get into wars every night in the gym. And my training and my mindset towards training has changed. But when I was younger, like, I was 12 years old, and I'll do doghouse rounds with anyone that's in the gym, you know. Like, I was kind of used coming up as 16's a man, so you're 14, you're a man. Like, go in there, and was it the smartest way to train? No. Was it the best way to train? No. But if I'm in the ring with someone and they're the same weight as me, I say I was in with men when I was 12 years old going to war. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm good with whatever you bring.
It builds your confidence too, doesn't it, James?
Yeah, I can fall back on like that. And that's just kind of, you know, David Goggins speaks about the cookie jar. Like, that's just in my mind that I have that. Like, where I was 12, 13, going to war with lads a lot bigger, a lot older than me. The mind, like, obviously they weren't the best boxers, or I wouldn't have been, I suppose, anywhere.
Still a boy against a man.
So I have that where I know you, that person that's across the ring from me wasn't in that situation. And even if you were, you're not better than me on that one. So just that experience, like, as you said, if you're missing that and you weren't in the game all those years, I've got a decade on you. Like, I've got that, you know.
Sounds like Mike Tyson used to fight men on the street.
Different animal.
At the age
different
of
animal.
11 and 12. Yeah. You know, and he used to batter him. Yeah. Basically, I think he had that, you know, that burst of raw speed.
Yeah.
And you know the way his movement is with the body. I think, like, he had it naturally. He just needed to be tamed. And, like, what goes done to him, it just pushed him and brought him on and just built his ego.
Did you ever see him even moving today? He still has it. Like, the movement, like, he's scary when you see him move. Like, you see, he's doing a lot of damage still, like.
Tyson wouldn't have been anything without Cuss either, you know. The affirmations telling him that, like, what he done, you can say it was brilliant, but you can also say it was very wrong, you know. He had a 13-year-old child, and he was saying, I don't know what age he was when he went to Cuss.
The damage was done already.
Yeah.
He had no family, like, he adopted him, like, as his own.
Yeah. You're not here, like, you're not a person, it's a mission. And I suppose that tamed Mike to an extent, but it kind of focused all of that raw aggression, that rage, onto something.
Yeah.
You know, it just gave him that vision, that purpose, and it was boxing. But he's still one of the most feared men on earth.
Yeah. Oh, he's a different level. I don't think we ever see a boxer like him.
And he looked great against Roy Jones a few months ago, didn't he? Yeah. He looked like, you know, he's doing a bit of damage still. Like,
he's a lot of demons too.
I
used to watch his podcast fair bit, and he used to smoke weed. But I see him doing the 5-MeO, you know, which is the frog, the DMT, And he had a powerful trip, yeah. like, in this thing. And he started roaring, crying, and we're looking at... But he gets very, very emotional when he's yeah. speaking about his past.
Mm.
Because he really regrets it, and you yeah. can hear it in his voice. And I can understand where he's coming from, because my own past as well. But he actually breaks down crying yeah. every time he speaks about the pain that he caused. You know, there's a lot of pain within him. And I think he is on a spiritual journey in his own life.
Yeah.
But... there's a lot of madness, you know, still there, but he is changing. It's like his journey has been that roller coaster where it went up, but now he's kind of coming down, which is the really calming side of him. You know, the weed now doesn't do him any good, trust me. You know, I think we have a lot to learn from someone like him, because he had a horrific childhood upbringing, like what he's seen. You know, and then to go on and accomplish what he did, and then have people after cuss, like, your man went down.
He was exploited, like.
Completely, and,
yeah.
you know, just to come out of that, like, and for all the madness that went in between the drugs and the women and everything else, and people just manipulating him to be where he is, I think he's an absolute legend, you know, and he's done some shit in his life that he's not proud of, you know, and that he lives with on a daily basis, you know, but that's part of his journey as well. Like, and it's just about moving on, isn't it?
And he's still an animal, anyway, yeah. that's all I know. But do you want to tell us a little bit about your debut? What's it like for a child, because you're only a child, being in school when he's leaving, sort, then taking a flight to Tijuana, having his professional debut and coming home and sitting in an exam? What's your mental state? Are you nervous, excited, anxious? Are you afraid? Like, you're going yeah. to Tijuana, like, and all these, you know, we all know Mexican boxers are fucking tough.
Yeah.
If they're nothing else, you're in for a hard fight. What's it like? What was that experience like?
The debut was an interesting one. I went there with Declan Garrity. He was coaching me at the time. We weren't that familiar with each other, but I'd done a few sessions with him. So we got on a plane. I think it was 14 hours straight flight. I don't know what airline I was with. You know, the management that was helping us, because I couldn't sign with them. I was too young. They helped us. They assisted us, advised. They booked a flight. I think it was 14 hours to LAX. We got off. I think it was near midnight. And one of the fighters came to collect us, who was living in Hollywood. We crashed on his couch. 3 a.m. or something, we drove down to Tijuana. I met the commission, weighed in, got my license. Next night, went down to the venue where I was going to be fighting. Said to go in and check it out. It was a little nightclub, a little corner, a little bar in Mexico. The guy at the door asked for IDs. ID. Don't have one. You can't come in. No, I'm fighting there later tonight. Not unless you have an ID. So... long story short, he found out we were Irish, so he left us in.
Oh, yeah.
Went in, saw the club, but it's completely different from anything I've ever been in, you know. It's a ring in a nightclub. Checked it out, got in, just moved around, you know, so that I was there before, that it wasn't a shock when I got in there. Went back that night, went in, place was jammed. Like, I had Mexican people drunk, banging on the side of the ring. Got in, and I suppose my mindset at that stage was, well, I always feel kind of fear, like nervousness, excitement, yeah. just before I get in. And then once I get in there, I'm good, like I'm solid. But every single fight I've ever had, I felt nervous leading up to it and getting in. But once I'm in there, I'm good. And I fought, just you kind of do what you do, like you do what you do. I won. You know,
what way did the fight go?
It was good. So I got first round. It's just don't make any mistakes, you know, just nice and simple. Stick to the game plan. I have my coach in my corner. You know, if anything goes wrong, he's got me. You have to trust that man in your corner. You know, you're going in there and it's a bit of an exaggeration, but your life is on the line. And, you know, there has been deaths in the sport. So yeah. you really got to trust that man behind you to do what's best for you. But, you know, it was just about getting experience, I suppose, in that situation. Got in, you know, came back after the first round and said, we got him. You know, change this, and you should be good. Went out, stopped him. The ref jumped in, got my hand raised and got a big roar off the crowd. And that's always what I suppose pleases me most is entertaining. And, you know, the Mexicans were entertained and got out, took a few pictures, you know, everyone kind of running over. It's a bit different for them too. You know, they're used to seeing Americans, Mexicans, American Mexicans. And then you see a little white 17-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And it's like the Irish lads are pretty pale, you know.
Yeah.
Took my top off. I'm like, white. So they're kind of like, who's he? Like Irish shorts on, green, white and orange. Yeah. Kind of like, what's happening here? Leading up to the fight, I kind of, like I told my mother the night before I fought, like if I lose, I'm not coming home. You aren't seeing me again. Like, there's too many people watching this. Like, oh, no, not happening. That was kind of...
Yeah, because it was in the news that you were going to fight. Because you were the youngest ever Irish professional boxer and you were too young to make your debut here.
Yeah.
So it was in the news. So there was a bit of pressure on you to perform as well, wasn't
there? Yeah, I've been very fortunate to get media attention and a bit of publicity and attention around, I suppose, my career at such a... early days, you know. But yeah, so I had all that, but I like, I suppose, visualizing what happens if it does go wrong, and just, I suppose, coming to terms with that this could go wrong, but you're going to do everything you can not to let that happen. Whereas a lot of people stay away from that, where that doesn't come into your head, there's no other option but to win. But I always found it a bit better to, I suppose, acknowledge those doubts and I suppose hit the nail on the head, get them out of the way, and then it's all good. But
and it's good as well, because worst case scenario, you get caught cold and you get sparked up. It's not the end of the world, because you're prepared for that.
Yeah.
But some people find it very hard to get back from a defeat, you know, and one defeat turns into two defeats, turns into a run. Whereas if you're in that mental state, right, we dust ourselves off and we go again, you know.
Yeah, like going in there, I said, like, yeah, you could get caught, anyone can get caught and get put out cold, but that's not going to happen. And that just set me good. Like, that's not going to happen. You've lived your whole life for this. You're not going to let that happen. So just have faith in yourself, I suppose. Got in there, got the job done, went back to Hollywood the next day, got on a flight, and then came back to school.
What was it like going back to school?
It was great. You know what? My friends and the teachers, they were incredible, like, for that whole year, because I've done that, you know, four times that year. I fought four times during my Leaving Cert. One of which I flew home the night before my Irish Oral. So I was in Hungary and then got on the flight that evening, flew home, got to Cork at 3 a.m. and my Irish Oral was at 9 a.m. that morning. So
that's brilliant gas, isn't it?
I couldn't have done it without the teachers or my mates, you know.
What kind of boxer would you classify yourself as? Would you be an aggressive boxer?
Yeah.
Would you be a smart boxer? Or would you be someone that just kind of picks them off?
Yeah, so my whole life I've just been aggressive. Like, aggressive. I'm going to put my head on your chest and we'll see.
Box.
Yeah, we'll see how far you're willing to push yourself, you know. Ever since I was tiny, like, I can watch, like, my mother, a few, like, I suppose, tape recordings of me doing exhibitions on 10. And I'm just running in there, throwing as many punches as I can with my head on their chest. And the kids, like, at 10 years old, feel like they're suffocating. And they just stop, like, they don't know what to do. Now, I still have that aggression, but I'm learning as well. You know, you can't run in there all heated or you will get tagged. There's an art to this. And, you know, I've been fortunate to train with a lot of great boxers and train alongside a lot of great coaches. And I've picked up a lot during the last couple of years, especially, but the past decade. And smart aggression is how I would describe my style right now.
Yeah, controlled. And who's the big fighters in your weight class in the world? In the elites?
Super Feather. I suppose around that weight would be Lomachenko, Gervonta Davis. Garcia is just a weight above. Devin Haney, Lopez.
Some talent, isn't
you know,
there?
There's a lot of big talent, you know, and they're all young lads. But it's about working out towards them, you know. I've spoke on a podcast before about calling out fighters, and you see a lot of, I suppose, young lads, young fighters my age, just jumping the gun and calling out, maybe not the biggest name in the division, but someone that would just rocket their publicity and their profile. And that's that shouldn't
be happening. Short-sighted, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, that's a shortcut. That's a hack. You earn your stripes. You earn those call-outs. You know, Ryan Garcia is in the position he is because he earned it. You know, people might say, oh, he's a celebrity, he's Instagram famous, but he has earned his place in the sport.
Campbell.
You know, he's earned
Luke Campbell
it.
Campbell is an Olympic champion. He beat John yeah. Evan.
Probably one of the most decorated, I suppose, British amateur boxers.
Yeah.
But all those lads, like even at a European level or Irish level, you can't just start and jump the whole platform and do a call out.
Your career could be over by the time it starts then. If you go in with one of these elite fellas too soon.
Yeah. Would you be confident in your own yourself going in with one of those boxers now?
Yeah, of course. I can separate, I suppose, that fighting mindset to just chatting every day. Like if you ask me what would happen if you fought Gervonta Davis, right now I tell you I'm not there yet. I'm not at his level yet. It would probably end in KO for Gervonta Davis. If Gervonta stand across the ring for me on fight night, I have no doubt in my mind that I'm going in there to beat him. Like, it's a different thing when that man is standing across the ring from you, or that fight is signed and who's going to win, or just chatting like, do you think you beat Lomachenko? Not a hope. That's the most skilled fighter that has ever lived. If you stand in the ring, Loma, I'm giving you everything you got. Like, I want to see what you're capable of. You beat these world champions? Okay, I don't care. It's me and you now. But you have to separate that. You have to be realistic.
It's
ignorant to think, like, you know, I know a few, like, you see a few young fighters saying, you know, I beat him. And you're going, but it's great to be confident in yourself when the time requires you to be confident in yourself. But right now, that's just ignorance because you're not there yet, you know. And it's no, like, shame to say, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
I will get there, that's my goal, but I'm not at his level right now. I'm going to put in the work to get there. But, yeah, every fighter is the same. If there's a man standing across the ring, do you believe you're going to beat him? Yes. If not, it's not the sport for you.
Fair play. I think you have some fantastic awareness about yourself and your capabilities and where you're going, you know, and it sounds like you're really pacing yourself with it. And what I'm getting from that is that you are going to be a world champion and you are going to beat these guys at the top of their level, like, because you're going to go step by step by step, you know. And I did see a few of your fights previously. I followed them because they used to come up in my news feed, and I was like, fuck. At the Hungarian one, I was looking at that and I was saying, Jesus, this is. And then when I found out who you are, and then I found out Tom is your uncle, and I said, God, yeah, this fella is a tough kid.
I remember a good few years ago when he was only 12 or 13, no, Kylie.
Yeah.
He used to be training up in Farrah Hawkins. I used to be in the gym, no law book. I used to be training with Kylie in another gym, weightlifting. And he was saying, hey, Tom put me in with his nephew the other day, but he said he hockeyed me around the ring. He said, I thought he was 16, 17, he was only 12.
Oh, Kylie's about 15 years older than you. Let's just say that.
And Kylie's a hardy fella as well.
He knows what to do.
Yeah, but he's not like a novice. Like, Kylie was fit and he had all the shapes and everything. But
do you know, I've a good question for here, all right. You go in with your chest. Was that something that you just had naturally from a young age? You knew you were just going in there to bang, or was it taught? Yeah,
I think it was. Obviously, I'd have to give credit to the people and the environment I was in, because I was too young to have the awareness I have now and learn the things that I suppose I have along the way. But it must have been the training, you know. My uncle Tom, he was coaching me at the time, and you know, the people that were with me were all older. I was very young in the gym. Just training alongside them and sparring them. And I think it comes back to what I said earlier of I've been with bigger and older opponents than you. So I know I've got that in you. And when I get in the ring, it was just, let's see how much he's willing to put himself into this. Like, is he willing to meet me in the middle of the ring? And if he does, who's backing away first? And I think it was just that mindset of no matter how much you're in pain or how much like you're down, he's going to quit first. And I've always had that. And it's, you know, it's pulled me through a lot of fights and a lot of sparring sessions where you know, maybe if I had that little chink in my armor, I wouldn't have pushed as far as I could have, and I wouldn't have, I suppose, cracked that opponent. Mm. But because I said, he's in more pain than me, I'm going to make him break before me, and then that just, you know, that just keeps going.
So when we had Spike on, he was telling us when he was leading up to his biggest fight, the one that he won, I think he won a junior world championship, or else it was an intercontinental title or something like that. But the fella he was fighting, he was an underdog going into it. Like, but Spike was saying, he was running up the hill by the airport and lashing the rain, and he climbed up a lamppost in the freezing cold, and he was doing chin-ups on the lamppost, you know. And he said, you know, when he says, he was saying to himself, this fella's living over in California, he's in the sunshine, no, he's not. And you know, when he was sitting across the ring from him, he was like, he didn't do what I did. He hasn't been to the dark places I've been. He didn't train as hard as I did. And that psychological, Spike knocked him spark out, you know. He had a great, probably his best victory to date, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a big part of the psychological as well, isn't it?
100%. Like, your mindset is everything. Like, it's you versus you as much as it is you versus the person opposite you. You know, it's the most powerful thing you have. If your mind says, okay, you can do this, there's a good chance you're going to do it. If your mind says, yeah, you're broken, it's too bad, and you have to fight that doubt, then, you know, it's a big struggle. One of the things I kind of got into with lockdown and all the gyms being closed and things like that, it's easy to fall into like a bad state of mind, and I suppose having a little bit of an identity crisis, like, who am I? Like, what am I going to do without boxing? Who am I? Mm. And I just had to kind of get something to give me purpose to get up in the morning. And I got into ultra running, which is anything over the distance of a marathon. And, you know, I'd done a few long runs. I'd done a few 50 kilometers, a few 80 kilometers, and I eventually done a 100 kilometer. But I was running 100 kilometers to 120 kilometers on average a week. And just getting up in the morning and, you know, if your legs are sore, okay, when that clock hits 10 a.m., I'm going on my run. And I'm going to do 20 kilometers and come back. And if you have any, like, doubt, it's a lot more difficult on the mornings where you have that, nah, your legs are sore, you can't run today, to get out and run on, instead of the mornings of, okay, yeah, you feel strong, let's go. But again, this is where discipline comes into it. And it was just testing all those things, you know. Like, I never relied on external motivation. I never needed someone to kind of pat me on the back and say, go do this. I've always been able to say, all right, I'm doing this, and no matter what happens, that's going to be done. Like, I don't check the weather forecast for my runs tomorrow. If it's pissing rain, I'm going for my run. If it's snowing, I'm going for my run. If it's 30 degrees, well, I'm getting sunburned while I'm going for my run. But it kind of tests all those things. And it's very interesting because I've spent my whole life boxing. So, you know, to go on those runs wouldn't, it would have like affected my boxing training. It would have like decreased the quality of my training. So I could never do that. And just that time in lockdown, just going out on those runs every day, it kind of builds that mental, I suppose, resilience.
Have you any life coach or like sports psychologist or anybody like that?
No. So I haven't worked with any. I've spoken to Vinny Shorman a few times. He works with a lot of top end, like MMA fighters, a few UFC fighters and things, but I've never actually spoken to him myself. No. Mm.
You have huge awareness, you know, that's all I say. Like, you sound like a fella that's after being doing his homework on this. Yeah. You're reading your books, watching your seminars on YouTube. I guess that's where it's coming from. So,
yeah, so like with, I suppose, lockdown, it kind of helped me in all those areas where I was doing my runs, and then I asked myself, what could I do that will benefit another area? So my mindset, what can I do that will benefit my mindset without any physical exertion? So I can do it while I'm resting after my runs. And that was reading, listening to podcasts. And like, I don't half-ass anything. Like, if I'm doing something, it's get all in. And my family kind of told me that from like first day. My mother, when I started boxing, was, do you like boxing? Yeah. Give it 2 weeks. Okay. Came back after 2 weeks. I still want to do this from, like, this is what I want to do. It's my dream now. Going to be a pro boxer. If that's what you're going to do, you got to understand that that means your childhood, your teenage years, most of your life is going to be in this one thing. Mm. Are you sure this is what you want to do? And, you know, if I, like I said, yeah, and, well, she held me to that. Like, if she was, she kind of said, if she was going to help me out, they dropped me to training and things, well, then I better stick to the course, and well, we're here now. So it's kind of get all in or get all out, and my family always had that mindset. But yeah, I got obsessed with running and reading. So I kind of spent, I was reading a book a week, easy, listening to two or three podcasts a day, and then running the 20, and just, I suppose, very quickly, you're just awareness.
Yeah.
Like your mindset, like, just explodes, and you see things from so many different perspectives, so many different authors, so many different stories.
Mm.
And I always kind of think, like, you can learn something from everyone. Remain teachable, because every experience is an opportunity to learn. And, like, it doesn't matter if it's the celebrity on your phone or on TV or the person that lives at the corner. Everyone has experienced different things in life, and you just learn from them. You don't, even if they're mistakes, you don't have to go through them yourself, because you already know what happens. You already know the consequence. But podcasts has been massive for me, you know. I've listened to so many of them now, and it's always great, you know. Even if it's just an hour, someone else's life, just a quick summary of their story, it's great to listen to.
Yeah, I think, like yourself, a lot of other people have been accessing podcasts during lockdown at Mark. Sometimes I think that was probably to the benefit of us, because we started in June last year in the height of lockdown, like, and we grew popular very quickly, you know. So maybe if it wasn't lockdown, would we have grown as quickly? I don't know. But definitely, I think it helped, because in the last 12 months in Ireland, podcasting has become huge, and there's so many podcasts out there now. And it's not just about the ones that have thousands or millions of views. Some of the ones that have only a handful of views have great content, you know. And I love listening to people's stories too. I love the books that you're talking about, and the people that you name, David Goggins, and the stuff you're talking about. That's kind of what I'm interested in now at the moment. Timmy would have been interested in that kind of for a long time as well. And I used to think it was kind of airy fairy or something, you know what I mean? But like you, reading the books, watching the seminars on YouTube, huge amount of awareness. And sometimes I find it hard to understand. That's okay. I pick up a little bit from each. And I always take in something out of the hour or 50 minutes I listen to it. Sometimes I'm up in my head thinking about what I'm going to have for my dinner, because 90% of my thoughts are about food. But maybe 10 minutes of the hour I listen to really resonates with me.
Yeah.
Do you know?
But it's not, we're never going to learn everything in the one book or the one podcast. It's about that journey. It's about picking up bits and pieces and consistency, just changing the habits that no longer benefit you in your life, and changing them slowly, you know, and just keep moving forward. And I've repeated this many times, like, when I really needed to help myself out because of my mental health, I chose to get up at 4:30 in the morning to meditate for an hour, to read, to listen to online lectures. No, I wasn't really able, you know, but that's how my life changed, you know. And I'm looking at you and the way you're sitting and your calmness, like, and I can see where that came from during the lockdown with the books and your understanding and awareness. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a 20-year-old have so much awareness. And that's the truth.
Thank maturity beyond your years, like, it's great. And, like, you know, when you were saying that you were doing ultramarathons and 100 kilometres a week, stuff like that, I'm thinking, like, this man is not going to gas out in a 12-round fight, you know? And that's what I'm thinking as well.
I'll do one of them ultramarathons with you next week. Give me a show next Monday.
Right, you'll be well able.
Ah, stop. I know, but you know what? You work towards it. You know, start small and stuff. But do you want to tell us a little bit about your trip to Thailand? How that came about and what it was like? And
so, like, everyone was affected by the lockdowns, and I suppose mental health was kind of on edge as well. You know, it was it was a strange time. I'm not going to sit here and say I had the worst mental health, because I didn't, you know, but I did struggle some mornings, you know, like, what's going on? What am I going to do with my life? All my mates are going into their second year of college or finding full-time jobs, you know, and that pressure comes up, you know.
We start to question your choices.
Not
maybe it was the first time in your life that doubt started creeping in.
Not exactly. Like, I'd never said, no, boxing's not the one. I've never thought those things, but it's a case of what's going to happen with boxing. Like, I still don't really know with everything that's going on. It's like, what's going to happen? But yeah, I kind of had those doubts, those, I suppose, seeds of uncertainty and didn't know what was going to happen in the future and things like that. And yeah, running was a massive thing for me that helped me out so much. But then towards the end of 2020, I kind of said, okay, you know what? I'm not doing 2021 in the same thing. I'm not sitting here ultra running for the whole year again. That's not happening. I'm changing course. I'm doing something. And I was fortunate enough that Tiger Muay Thai and I got in contact and we started speaking and one thing led to another and it was, do you want to come out and do a few months in Thailand? To get into Thailand, you have to do 2 weeks in a government hotel because they lock down the entire outskirts so no one can get in without doing 2 weeks and you get tested twice and, you know, if you're positive, you go to hospital. If you're negative, you get left into Thailand. So there was no cases or anything. It was full lockdown. And then the inside was completely open. So it was a bit like a barricade, like a wall around Thailand. Mm. So I got in and, you know what, Thailand was an amazing experience. You know, Phuket was a beautiful place. And the training on a different world, you know, I trained with a lot of coaches there that taught me a lot of things that are going to benefit my career and my life moving forward.
How does the Thai training differ to the boxing training?
So I was training fully boxing there.
Oh, I see.
So I kind of fell into, they call it Western boxing, but it's just boxing to us. Yeah. And I was doing those classes. I was doing a lot of strength and conditioning out there.
Well, was it heat and humid?
Yeah, so it never really got below 25. Like if it was midnight, it's 25 degrees. Hot day, like a normal day would be 30 or above, but it feels like you're in a sauna. Like it feels like someone's trying to suffocate you for the first 2 or 3 weeks, but then you're solid, you know. And I was living in the gym, I was living on the street. So I'd wake up, I'm an early riser, I'd get up and I'm walking towards the street or towards the gym at 6 a.m. It doesn't open until 7. I'd get there. I could get there in 10 minutes if I wanted, but I'm talking to all the locals, gradually walking up. Could take me an hour and a half to get to the gym. I'm just talking to everyone. By the first week, I knew everyone on that street, and people are living there for years, mightn't have even known them. Get to the gym, and I train. Like, I was doing 5 sessions a day. Like, I was training for hours. I could have spent anywhere between 4 to maybe 6 hours in the gym, and you know, you very quickly adjust to the heat. Mm. But the strength and conditioning was the best I've ever experienced. You know, Sean Cobbs, Peter and Holly, they were, I suppose, the trainers I work with more closely. And the plan was to get back in shape and then get back fighting. The Asian boxing scene is one that I am confident I could just dominate, especially on my weight division. You know, most of the Asian fighters are my weight. So I was looking at the guys ranked in the top 10 and I said, if you give me number 1, I fancy my chances. Very early on, we realized that there was going to be an issue because in Thailand, they don't have managers. So the Thai promoters wouldn't speak to my management and I can't fight without my management's consent. Now, my management were willing to work with them and, you know, they were willing to do everything, but nothing could be kind of finalized. It just couldn't be worked out. So fighting was off the cards, but I just continued training. And you know what, it's an amazing experience. And the thing that was best about that trip was the people I connected with. You know, I traveled there alone, but I wasn't alone very long. You know, I made friends for life and people I class as family now. But you know, people kind of look at me now like, you were there for 4 months. You can't say you made family, but you're with them every day. Yeah. Like if they're in the gym with you, you're with them, you know, from the morning to when the gym closes. Together you might go as a group and get something to eat and come back to the gym. When the gym closes, you all go down to the beach, chill out there, watch the sunset, then you come back, you might grab more food, and then everyone goes to their homes, meet again the morning. So you're with each other constantly.
Do you think the man, this is bringing you back now to something, do you think over there some of those promoters knew what kind of a talent you are and they didn't want you to fight their boxers?
I'm not sure. I think it was more that's how they run things. That's how they run things with the Muay Thai fighters, because there's no managers in Muay Thai or anything like that. So I think they just kind of treat boxing the same as Muay Thai, where why would you have managers for this when we don't have managers for our sport?
Just a different culture, like.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have been that big of an issue, but it was just difficult, you know. It's kind of, they kind of feel disrespected that you want to call shots. Like, who do you think you are, you know? Why do you want your management involved when it's like...
They just wanted like a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah, this is who you're fighting and this is it. But again, there's so many little things in boxing where you need everyone on board. But yeah, you know, that wasn't a major heartbreak, you know.
But you got COVID over there, did you?
Yeah, so after a few months there, my visa was running up, and because I wasn't going to be staying there for too long, there was no point applying for a 6-month visa or anything like that, because I couldn't fight there, and I wanted to come home and get my visa to go to America, so there was no point in me hanging about training. You know, I loved the place, I really did. The people there, incredible, and, you know, I'd love to go back there, and I will go back there, but it just didn't suit at the time. Come home and get back out somewhere else where you can train and fight. Get the career back online or on the road. Went to test, you know, to get the PCR to fly home. So I booked my flights. You have to test in a government hospital in Thailand. So just so they have a record of every test and every case and all that.
Yeah.
And went... tested, they said they'd email the result to me the next morning. I said, perfect. I felt great, felt brilliant. Went home. The next morning, I was packing my bag. I went and got breakfast, came back, was packing all my things, and I got a phone call from some department in the government to say, James, you tested positive for COVID. Get to your hotel room, isolate as soon as you can. We'll contact the hotel. Tell them, tell everyone, stay indoors, and the government or the hospital will come and collect you. Hung up the phone. So now I'm sitting there going, well, where do I go? What happens, you know? And rang the mother to say, listen, there's no point going waiting for me at the airport because I'm not going to be there. Tested positive for COVID, unfortunately, but there's nothing to worry about. I feel great. I won't be sick or anything. I'm good. And she was like, what's happening now? So, you know, I got in touch with the hospital again. Well, they got in touch with me and said, when you're ready, give us a call. And I said, what's happening now? When I get there, what's the deal? And he said, well, you have two options, go private or go government. He said, you go government, you could be put into a 50-bed ward. Could be put into a hall and we just stack in people and it's very cramped, you know. It's not going to be a great experience. Or you could go private and you get your own little room. So it's not great. You just have a hospital bed and your own bathroom, but you're on your own. So I said, no worries. And I rang my mother and said, this is the situation. And you know, she was on tears on the phone. Said, listen, go to the private one. You know, I'd feel a lot better. She'd feel a lot better herself if I was in a private one where she knew I was safe.
Yeah.
And I was saying, you know, I'll go to the government one because you don't pay for the government one. The private one, they're expensive. So I said, listen, I'll go to the government one. And she, you know, as mothers do, she was barking in tears. So I just said, you know what, for her sake, okay, I'll go. Then, you know, I went to the hospital and yeah, they can do what they want now. So they have you in the room and you can't do anything. And they started racking up that bill. And, you know, there was 3 hours in and, I was in, the price was coming to a bit over a grand and I was only in a few hours. So I was kind of saying, listen, lads, I'm not doing 2 weeks in here if it's going to be this price.
Yeah.
I said, well, what would you like to do? I said, I'm moving to hospital because I'm not paying. So I moved to a different hospital. It was half the price, but again, it wasn't where you'd like to be. So yeah, I was coming back out of Thailand in debt, the way I was looking at this, but you know, my family, massive help, and my management, you know, they proved that they're in my corner for more things than just the sport, that you know, they're with me when things are bigger than just boxing, and this was coming down to life, you know. And yeah, they really stepped up, and I can't thank them enough, you know.
That's great to hear, because you're often hear about boxers being exploited by management, you know, and being used, and then when the shit hits the fan or they're in trouble or they need to dig out, then they're found wanting.
Yeah.
But you seem like you have a good relationship with your management.
Yeah, so my management, instantly I got that impression off them, you know. I reached out to them, and as a kid, you know, just ask. And I always tell people, you know, if you are in a situation, there are people that want to help you. Simply ask. And I reached out and said, listen, would you like to have a conversation? My manager is Ken Shear, and the management team is Shear Sports Promotions.
Mm.
So, or Shear Sports Management, whichever way. And they said, yeah, sure. Would you like to come to Los Angeles and meet us? Went out to Los Angeles. They met him for a while and then came home. A few months later, they said, listen, we like you. Do you want to come out and experience this style of life? Like, I know you said this was your dream, but before you sign yourself into a contract for, you know, multiple years, let's see if this is really what you want to do.
Mm.
And they brought me out for 3 months, and I went through a professional training camp, the first I've ever done, fought, won, came home. And then they asked, well, is this what you want to do? Said yes. And then they put the contract, but they weren't signing me up before that. They wanted to make sure that, you know, we all got along and that this is what I wanted to do. But with Thailand, you know, that was, you know, looking back on it, it wasn't that massive of a deal. Like, I got COVID and it shouldn't have been a big deal, but things just fell into the wrong place, you know. Mm. And like, when I got released, my, you know, the fear in there was something else, because I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know when I could get home. The nurses are coming in every 4 hours to wake you up, starting at midnight, 4 a.m., 8 a.m., midday, 4 p.m., 8 p.m., midnight.
Just to see how you're getting on.
To take a temperature test, take a blood pressure, and take your heart rate every 4 hours. So you don't sleep.
Yeah.
And then you have the fear of, like, what's going on and what's going on inside. And, you know, I kind of got a bit paranoid in there, you know, and I'm a very, like, mentally strong person, and yeah, it did break me. And you know, I was kind of in there, and the 2 weeks flew by like that, but I spent maybe 20 hours a day staring at my phone, worried that I was going to miss something, worried that someone was going to message that something went wrong, or, you know, I was just, I was paranoid, I was freaked out in my head.
Were you sick during this
No
time?
So I got one day where I kind of got, so I couldn't sleep anyway. So what was happening was I was awake for 40 hours, and then I might pass out for a couple. Then I wake up again in a panic, check my phone, constantly seeing if I miss something, did something go wrong? Which is, like, it's not what I, like, I'm pretty laid back, relaxed, but I was
just an intense situation. Freaked, like.
Yeah. And then you know that you have debt, and what are you going to do? And then you're in a foreign country, what's going to happen? And illness with the virus itself, I got one night where I had the flu, and that's where you get muscle aches, and it was rough now, but it was only 4 hours. Like, it was just that just bit of the night.
Yeah.
That was good. I didn't have taste or smell the next day, but like after that I was good, you know.
But that's at least that, like, you know, tough experience though.
Yeah.
You know, like, something to tell the grandkids about.
Yeah, the 2 weeks lying in the hospital bed was a lot worse than getting the virus itself in my situation, you know, coming from training so hard and so often to inactivity.
Yeah.
Sounds like that government really taking advantage of people as well in terms of,
I think it's more fear for the virus. Like, Thailand, again, lockdown, everything, they kind of handle this where they just, they handle it where they just protected their people, you know. They locked off all tourism. If you want to get in, you do your 2 weeks, so you can't get COVID. What happened was there was an outbreak in Bangkok, and it spread like wildfire.
Mm.
And then people in Phuket started getting it coming from Bangkok and all this. And before you knew it, it was all over the place. And then I got it. But there's, you know, there's no one to blame or anything. It's just, it's just a virus.
Fucking, it was all over the world, isn't that? You knew you got it. It didn't do much damage to it. It was just the. But. Have you coming up, any fights coming up, or are you in camp at the moment, or you look pretty lean at the moment?
Yeah, so I got home started rebuilding after the month, the final month, Thailand. Just got back into training and things. Was supposed to get my visa to go back to America. And once I'm there, I'm good. I'm settled back into camp, ball rolling, and just stay on top of things. And because there's still a travel ban between Ireland and America, they postponed my visa. Now, if I get my visa, I'll just go somewhere else where I'm allowed to fly to America and do that. But they postponed it again to the end of the year. I don't know what's going to happen because, well, it's all uncertain now. But I'm positive, back to myself, mentally strong, and fit.
And we're getting vaccinated now as well. You know, things will start going back to normal and everything. You know, so there's great things to look forward to. Just 2021, just another few months now that you have to endure. But ask you something. I asked Spike, who's the pound for pound? Who's the top three fighters pound for pound
at the moment?
At the moment, in your opinion,
Canelo Alvarez number one.
He looks Irish too, doesn't he?
Canelo. He started in very similar situation to me.
Yeah.
The same commission and everything.
He's cool as well, isn't he?
Yeah, Canelo. So my training partner in California is actually in camp with Canelo at the moment.
Really?
Ron Lellis. He's a sparring partner for the past six Canelo fights. So he's in there at the moment. He sent me, I was FaceTiming him yesterday, and he sent me a video of Canelo. I was just like, this is sickening.
He's an animal, isn't he?
Sick. He's ridiculous.
But you know, when he fought Golovkin, Golovkin hit him with some punches. You know, his neck is, and his neck is so strong. He took Golovkin's punches like that. People was going unconscious, which, you know, like, he's made differently, isn't he? He's just a specimen.
He just keeps getting better, which is scary because he's 31 now. He's still in the prime of his life.
He is. He went up and he beat Kovalev, who was only twice the size of him.
Yeah, so he went from, was it welterweight, light welterweight, all the way to light heavy.
Up to light heavy.
It's freaky.
Yeah.
And he's beaten light heavyweights as well.
Yeah, and he's dangerous.
Like, he beat Callum Smith's arm.
Yeah. Broke Billy Joe's face.
Yeah, I know, I'm poor Billy Joe.
He broke the man's face.
And it looked
he
like...
He broke his eye socket,
is
it?
Yeah. Like,
it's hitting hard.
And he stalked Billy Joe down as well, didn't he? It was like a matter of time, you know?
He's I don't think anyone beats him.
No, like, not at all.
I'd like to see Floyd Mayweather in his prime fight him. No, I think it'd be a complete
I don't know, does anybody
fight.
Be Floyd, though?
I think Canelo's too big at the moment, but I think, because Floyd was only small, he was 150, was it 154? Canelo's 168, but again, I don't think anyone beats Floyd on the night because Floyd just finds a way. He's ridiculous.
But when you think about all the people Floyd fought, you know, Miguel Cotto, Manny Patton, great fighters, always won.
Yeah.
Shane Mosley, amazing fighters, not all greats and legends of the game.
Yeah.
And he beat every one of them, you know. Yeah. De La Hoya, and I don't know if it was a close fight, but who's number two?
This is a hard one. I'd go Terence Crawford, personally.
That's a good one, though, because you wouldn't hear many. We haven't heard that many.
Crawford or Spence, because there's a big debate there.
Yeah.
Who's the best? I back Crawford more, but there's an argument for Spence. Number three. I like Usyk, but not as a heavyweight. As a cruiserweight, he definitely belongs in the pound for pound because he dominated the cruiserweights. He moved up to heavy, so if you class him as heavy, he's not in my pound for pound.
Tough fight for Joshua, though.
Yeah.
Joshua just a bit stronger, probably.
Yeah, and you know what? Joshua has kind of proven that he will take a fight. Like, he's not afraid of the challenge. Like, I don't think he's as skilled or as gifted as Fury or any of them.
Yeah.
I don't think he beats Fury. I even struggle to see him beating Wilder because Wilder can hit him. And if, like, it's a big thing now of Fury just didn't get hit by that right hand and said that, and that's exactly what he done. But a lot of men tried that before Fury, and a lot of men failed, you know, every single one of them hit that deck. But he's showing that he's not afraid to take a challenge, and it's an interesting matchup. You know, Usyk is he's an exceptional boxer, probably one of the most skilled boxers in that weight division at the moment.
Yeah.
But Joshua's big, you know, he's a lot of power if he can hit him.
Yeah.
I'm backing Joshua on that one, but it's an interesting matchup.
Do you know, Usyk and Lomachenko, they have this type of dancing, the Ukrainian dancing, right? That's their footwork is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I think that's like what makes them so unique, their movement. Like, you see Lomachenko fighting, you never see anybody moving like that. The angles he gets, the punches, and you know, and it's from dancing as children, like.
Yeah.
It's mad, yeah, his father said, if you want to be a boxer, we're taking you out of boxing and putting you into dancing. He done that for like several years, and they said, okay, now you can go back boxing.
Yeah.
So his father's the mastermind behind that.
What about the upcoming lads like Conor Benn? What's your team?
I like Conor Benn.
I like Conor Benn too.
I like Conor Benn. I like his progress in recent years, and I like his mindset. Like who he has, who he is as a person. You know, very, I suppose, woke, very conscious. The upcoming lads, I like him. Joe Cardina is another one who trains with Conor Benn. Very stylish boxer.
Yeah.
In Ireland, Gary Cully. He's one to watch out for. Big lightweight, 6'2", southpaw. Dangerous. Yeah. Has knockout power. You know, I've trained alongside Gary and I've sparred him. But, yeah, he's the next thing to watch out for in Ireland.
Yeah. We keep our eye out. And
sparred him.
I've sparred him, yeah.
He's probably double your weight, I'd say, is he?
He knows, so he's lightweight. Yeah. So he's lightweight. He's 135 pounds,
yeah.
But he's 6'2". And he's a
how
southpaw.
The fuck?
235, is it?
No, 135.
So he's 60. He's a lightweight, but he's 6'2" lightweight. Oh, so he must be like a rake,
southpaw.
Is he?
And oh, southpaw. And he's hard.
Yeah. 6'2".
Jesus, he's one to watch out for. But yeah, again, workhorse. People kind of say that he's talented or gifted, but yeah, he puts in an incredible amount of work, and he's definitely one to watch out for. Yeah, yeah. Trains up at Pete Taylor's, and you know, I was in that camp, and you know, exceptional coach and exceptional fighter.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Someone to look out for like yourself, you know. So best of luck for the future. Thanks a million. It was a pleasure talking with you. I love talking boxing.
Thanks for having me on.
And I think the boxing podcast will be very popular because there'll be a lot of boxing fans.
Yeah.
But it was lovely to meet you, and best of luck with everything going forward.
Appreciate it, lads. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Thanks, everyone. Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and don't forget to head over to the Patreon if you'd like to help us. Thanks again.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.